Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. This show will first be broadcast on Wednesday, July 24th, 2024, on 91.7 FM, WHUS Storrs. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host, Ron Meniza. We're coming to you live from beautiful Mansfield Hollow, Connecticut. Comment below to let us know you're here and ask questions. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, and Buzzsprouts. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live and Instagram Live episode at FranStorchND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on this show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. So before you go somewhere, how are you feeling?
Better. Better, I would say.
Yeah.
You know, interesting ride this morning.
Yes.
Painful. Big hills, you know. But, because I have no muscle strength. But
still have no muscle strength.
No. I mean, it's getting better, but it's going to be a long process.
How come I feel like I have muscle strength, but I climb slower than you?
I don't have an answer for that. everyone's different. So, interesting thing that happened. I'm glad you asked this because I wanted to explain this to you. In the past, I would get done with a ride or I'd be out on a ride and all I would feel was fatigue in the legs.
Yes.
But no power. Now I've got power, a little more power than I used to have because I'm building back my muscle.
Yeah.
And when I got done with my ride this morning after riding up to the community center and back home, my muscles were sore to the touch.
Uh-huh.
Which is something that I had experienced years ago when I was training hard.
Oh.
Okay. And then when I went up and down the stairs just a little while ago, I got that severe fatigue thing that came in afterwards.
Oh.
But it started with just sore muscles, which
right.
is a good sign because that means I'm building muscle strength
again. You're
using them.
Yes.
I'm building strength back.
Yeah, that's good.
So I am in a feeling that I'm back. I'm coming back.
That's
it's
great.
It's going to take a while, but I'm coming back.
That's very good.
That's how I feel.
So you felt good. So,
yeah.
And so this weekend, you'll probably do a club ride of some kind.
I will, yeah.
Yes, and we're trying to decide which distance.
Right.
Yeah, okay. And I'm trying to decide because I'm a planner, and I don't know.
And I will wake up in the morning and decide, because that's how I do things. Because
right.
I don't let myself get stressed out about that sort of thing.
Okay. All right. It's just that one of the rides has to be planned in advance.
I understand.
Okay. All right. So we'll talk about that later.
Yeah,
all right.
Right.
And then as far as I'm concerned, I'm doing pretty well as well. My knee is in good shape. I rode 3 days in a row of varying intensities. I did a big intense climby ride on Saturday with a friend. And that wound up being good. I felt okay in my body, and I felt my knee felt okay afterwards. My knee is not sore. And yesterday we went out and did very short rail trail recovery, just our coffee ride out and back to Willimantic. And
yes,
then today I went and climbed some hills. I spent an hour and change on the bike. And I didn't do hill repeats, but I climbed a bunch of icky hills. and that was successful, and I feel okay, and I'm not dizzy or dysautonomic, and my knee is all right. So I'll probably put some ice on the knee today, and I'm trying to be careful with it. I have varying intensities of compression braces. The lightest compression one, the elastic seems to have gone off. So I might get another one of those because they have those at the drugstore. So I might grab another one of those. But I have a medium compression, a little harder compression, and very intense compression. So I have like varying gradients of compression. And so I'm doing the light to medium one when I'm on the bike now. And I don't know if I need it. I just feel like it's almost for security. And then I have it taped all the time. So I don't feel ready to take the tape off either. And I continue to get acupuncture. I continue to get chiropractic. I had PT exercises that I was doing, but I had a flare while I was doing those exercises. And one of the things my chiropractor said to me is, you have to get stabilized before you do certain kinds of exercises. And I thought the exercises, because it included lateral movement, it made me nervous. So I stopped doing that one. The back reset, the pelvic reset, there's no problem there because that doesn't hurt my knees. But the monsters, the sideways monsters, I'm nervous to do those because I had a flare when I was doing that. And I just wonder if I was overdoing. What was I doing? Sideways monsters.
I don't know. I like those.
Yes, I know you like the sideways monsters. They're very nice. And the clamshells. And I thought that I was nervous that they were just pulling on my lateral ligaments too much and that the meniscus couldn't handle it. So I may add those back in. The other thing I'm doing is when I do my weight training, I'm doing my normal weight training routine. My weight training routine includes push-ups. It includes a plank with suitcases where you're lifting up, you're pulling up with it on weights from a push-up position. And it also includes just straight up planks. So right now what I'm doing, because I'm nervous to have the knee be suspended for any length of time, I'm doing all that push-ups and the pull-up planks and the regular planks with my knees on the ground. So Ron gave me a wonderful holiday gift this year that I asked for, which was you can get these knee jellies. They're for doing yoga. So they're when you're going to spend some time in a pose with your knees on the ground, they're jelly, you know, they're soft
knee pads.
Yeah, they're basically knee pads that you put on the ground, and they're shaped like a flower with a depression in the middle, and you put your knees in them and they pad your knees, and they're very nice, and it's, I think it's nicer than just using a blanket or something because they really have some spring to them. So I'm putting my knees in those to do my push-ups and my arm pull-ups and then my planks. And so I'm not doing forward plank or side plank with my knees completely suspended just because I'm nervous. And I said I'm going to do at least a month of that. And then if I have no problem with my knees, then maybe in September I'll bring my knees up back into the air if we're fine at that time. Meanwhile, been able to ride 34 miles and then subsequent days of shorter distances, I've been fine, which is very exciting. And so I think a couple things, you know, time has passed. I'm taking a lot of supplements to help. I did add something in that I'm very happy about, and that compound, it has ligament from animals in it with nutrients from animals. And so I'm taking that. And I wonder if that's support. I hadn't been taking that for a long time, and now I added back in. I'm taking collagen. So I'm taking this supplement that helps to put that together. I wonder if that's part of what's helping. So that's exciting. So things are good. And then my autonomic nervous system is handling it. I felt a little slightly shaky in mid-ride on Saturday, but I got over it. And I came home and I drank and I got cool and all that, and I felt better. And today when I went out, I definitely got hot. It was only 74 degrees when I came home. But you still get hot because it's sticky out. Did you feel like it was kind of humid today?
It was a little humid today.
Yeah. Well, you were out earlier.
Yeah, earlier than I was. Really early. So.
Yeah, and the temperatures came up by the time I got out. So, all right. So now let's get on to what we're going to talk about. The first thing we're going to talk about is how your hormones affect your sleep. So let's talk about that. Hormones can definitely do that. How sleep can affect your hormone levels and here's some things that can help you to sleep deeper. So hormones, by the way, are chemical messengers. They play a role in regulating your lots of processes, systems, and function. What a hormone is it's something that's made by a gland and then gets dumped directly into your blood, and it's generally made by endocrine glands. An endocrine gland has a direct release into your bloodstream. It has a blood supply, and it releases its compounds into your bloodstream, as opposed to an exocrine. Well, actually, there are endocrine and exocrine hormones. An endocrine hormone is something that gets released directly into your bloodstream. An exocrine hormone is something that has a duct that dumps into your bloodstream. So things that really want, that you really want to control going into your system are going to be released by way of a duct. Whereas something that you need all the time, like reproductive hormones and thyroid hormone and energy hormones like cortisol, they are endocrine hormones because you need those all the time. What you don't need all the time is bile. You don't need the hormones that control GI secretions all the time. So they are, that they have systems of bile ducts, and there's pancreatic ducts that will dump your enzymes into your small intestine. And you don't want to have, you don't want to have those hormones or those substances when, unless you need them. Same with sweat. Sweat is an exocrine substance. So it's released from exocrine glands, and there are little ducts from your that are inside your skin that dump sweat onto your onto the outside of your skin, because you don't want to be sweating all the time. Otherwise, if it was endocrine, you'd be sweating all the time. So endocrine glands generally dump hormones. Exocrine glands don't always dump hormones. They dump other substances like bile and like enzymes and like sweat. So anyway, so hormones are responsible for all kinds of stuff. Your metabolism, your appetite. So gastrin and secretin are GI hormones. And then they control growth. They control your body temperature. They control sexual function, drive, and reproduction. They control your heart rate. So your epinephrine, norepinephrine controls your heart rate. And blood pressure, same thing. And your sleep-wake cycles, that would be like melatonin. Melatonin does that, and to an extent, epinephrine, norepinephrine. You're going to have less epinephrine, norepinephrine, cortisol when you're going to be sleeping, and more of that when you're not. Melatonin, you're going to have more of that when you're sleeping and less of it when you're not. So production and function is influenced by other functions like sleep. So various hormone functions and release are impacted by sleep or circadian cycle. Getting enough sleep is important for a lot of hormones. So it's important for cortisol, for example. So cortisol, you have to sleep to get your cortisol up high enough so that you can wake up in the morning. So when you go to sleep at night, your cortisol is at its lowest point. So your cortisol cycle is basically, it's high, first thing in the morning when you wake up. And then it goes down, stepwise over the course of the day until it's low enough at night that you feel tired and you want to go to sleep. And while you're sleeping, it gradually rises over the course of the night until it gets high enough in the morning so that you want to wake up again. And if your cortisol cycle is messed up, then you can have trouble with falling and staying asleep or being too wired during the day and stuff like that. So estrogen and progesterone, which are the so-called female hormones, even though men and women have both estrogen and progesterone, they're considered to be the female hormones because they help to control the female reproductive system and female organs and stuff. So in order to have adequate estrogen and progesterone, you have to sleep properly. And cortisol, estrogen, progesterone are relatives. So cortisol suppresses estrogen and progesterone. So when your cortisol is low at night, estrogen and progesterone can rise. If your cortisol is high all the time, so if your cortisol is too high at night or it spikes at various points during the day, your estrogen and progesterone will not be able to rise. If you have too much cortisol, it suppresses ovulation. So the only way you can really get progesterone, aside from taking it, is to ovulate. Because you ovulate, you kick out an ovum, you make a follicle, and then you ovulate, and the follicle splits, and half of it stays in your ovary and becomes a corpus luteum to make progesterone for you, and the other half becomes an ovum, possible future baby, right? And so now, if the egg gets fertilized, then it creates a placenta, and the placenta is the tissue and nutrient source that has a lot of blood in it that attaches itself to the inside of the uterus, and you have about 2 weeks worth of progesterone in the corpus luteum. Corpus luteum dries up; its supply of progesterone dries up, and then after 2 weeks. If you are pregnant, you're going to experience nidation, which is where the embryo makes a nidates. It makes a nest into the side of the uterus, And at that point, the progesterone is made by the placenta. So it takes over the production of the progesterone and progesterone. And you make tons of progesterone while you're pregnant. So the only two ways you can make progesterone are by ovulating or by being pregnant. And that's it. If you don't ovulate, you don't make progesterone. So or there might be a little bit that's produced from estrogen, from adrenal hormones, but not like when you ovulate, not like when you are pregnant. All right. Hunger hormones help with sleep, insulin, leptin, and ghrelin. If you have, you'll sleep better if you have adequate leptin. You won't sleep as well if you have too much ghrelin. Your ghrelin has to calm down. Ghrelin is the one that makes you hungry. Insulin ultimately makes you hungry. So if you're insulin resistant, you have too much insulin around, you will probably not sleep as well. So those things need to be controlled. Melatonin makes you sleepy, and melatonin has the opposite cycle to cortisol. So they cross each other like a big X. So melatonin, you want melatonin to be high, and your melatonin peaks between like 9 and midnight. So if you go to sleep after midnight, you're not hitting that melatonin high. And it's really a good idea to go to sleep when you're on a melatonin high, because you'll be able to fall asleep the best and stay asleep the best. So if you push yourself to stay awake too late at night, you won't sleep as well. It's like that old saying, every hour before midnight counts as two. And, you know, you think that's an old wives' tale, but it's really not, because there are hormonal reasons why that's true. You want to hit your cortisol at its lowest, and you want to hit your melatonin at its highest. And that's going to happen probably somewhere between 9 and midnight, and maybe earlier if you're an early bird. So if you're an early riser, so like if you wake up at 5, 6 in the morning and you feel really great when you do that, your cortisol is probably peaking at that time, and your melatonin and maybe peaking at something like 8, 9 o'clock. And that's fine. So probably people's circadian cycles are a little different from each other. And then some people don't have a 24-hour cycle. So they wind up having to go to bed later and later and later. And some people, when they allow themselves to follow their natural circadian cycle, that's longer than 24 hours, they have to go to sleep an hour later every night until they're sleeping during the day. And then it cycles around. And then, as you know, I don't know if you know this, I will tell you that there are three basic circadian types, and they are, the most common type is what I am. And I am in the middle. So I feel good when I wake up somewhere between 7 and 9 a.m. usually, you know, somewhere between 7:30 and 8 o'clock, and the 8 o'clock hour is about when I'm going to be up for good. And then I like to go to sleep. My body wants to go to sleep somewhere between 10 and 11. And that's the most common circadian type. So fortunately, my work days, you know, I don't work far from my home. And two of my patient care days start at 10 o'clock, which works great for me because I can get up at 8-ish and get a little bit of exercise in and then get to the office. And then one day a week, it's 9 o'clock and I get just a little bit of exercise and I can still get to the office and feel pretty good. But if you have to get up earlier, much earlier than your circadian type, you're not going to feel good. You're going to feel tired in general. Ron, I'm not clear if he's really a middle one or if he's an early bird. He's somewhere in between, because he can get himself to wake up super early, but when he doesn't have to wake up, he sleeps till 7-8 or you know, 6:30 to 8, something like that. But your circadian cycle is a little bit skewed from mine. It's you fall asleep earlier, but it's because you get up so early. I don't know what would happen if you stopped teaching your 5:45 classes, if you would sleep till, you know, naturally sleep till the 7 o'clock hour.
If I keep going to bed real late at night, yeah.
Yeah, right.
Depends on when I go to bed at night. Really.
But if you have the option to go to bed anytime you want and wake up anytime you might, I'm not sure what would happen. So it's not clear to me if you're a middle one or if you're an early bird. I mean, do you like to go to bed at 8 o'clock at night? Because I don't see you. I don't see you getting around to making us dinner until pretty late.
Right. Well, there's usually a few reasons for that. I've gotten into a schedule of making dinner late because you get home late.
I only get home late 2 nights a week.
Sometimes true.
Yeah. No, that's, I mean, the rest of the week we could we could be eating earlier, I suppose. But yeah. But anyway. But
at that point, I would be in bed by 10. I would be asleep by 10.
Yeah. All right. And we could do that. So anyway, people differ. So the three basic types are, like I said, that you want to wake up at around somewhere between 7 and 9 and go to bed between, 10 and 10, 11 midnight. So that's what most people are. So I think most people in this country aren't following their circadian cycle in terms of when they get up and they're active during the day. Then there's the early bird. That's the second most common one. The early bird, they're going to get up. They want to get up at somewhere between 4 and 6 a.m. and they go to sleep at like 9 o'clock tops. And that's the second most common circadian type. I don't have numbers. I don't have percentages for this. And then there's the least common type, which you probably know some people who are like this, and that those are the night owls. And they want to sleep in till, 11 o'clock noon, and they stay up late at night, watching TV, playing video games. They just like to be up at night. And that's unusual. And that can be really hard if that's you, because our society doesn't really function on those hours. But it can happen. And so those people, your melatonin is going to spike at pretty much at the time that you your preferred sleep time, and your cortisol is going to be the lowest, and vice versa in the morning. All right. Thyroid hormones are also affect your sleep. If you don't have adequate thyroid hormone, it will affect your sleep. If you have too much thyroid hormone, you'll be extra sleepy. Thyroid hormone gives you energy and it runs your metabolism. But if you're too low or too high, it will affect your sleep. And then growth hormones. Will make you sleepier. And growth hormone is the most active while you're resting or sleeping. That's why if you never get any rest, you can't grow. If you're pushing cortisol all the time, cortisol is your fight or flight, and it's the thing that's going to give you the energy to do stuff. Cortisol, its job is to break down tissue, generally protein, turn it into sugar so you can run away from the bear or do whatever it is you're going to do during the day. So if you're in high cortisol all the time, you can't, if you're a kid, it's hard for you to grow. And if you're a grown up, you're just always putting sugar into your blood and you are going to grow, but you're going to grow a belly. You're going to grow body fat because you're going to have too much sugar into your blood and your body's going to want to store that sugar. And the place that it's going to store it is in your abdomen. And so why would you want growth hormone if you're a 60-year-old lady like me? Well, I would want it at night so I can grow muscles. So if I just went out and did a bunch of hills and did some slow reps on the bike, I'm growing muscle in my legs. And so most of that growth is going to happen not when I'm on the bike. I'm telling my muscles to grow when I'm on the bike, but then the actual synthesis is going to happen when I'm sleeping. And so that's why it's important for me to eat lots of protein. And so I'm always working on doing that. So melatonin, as you know, controls sleep patterns, tells your body when to get to sleep. Human growth hormone is released during your deep sleep hours. So you have to get your stage 3 sleep in order to get cell growth and repair and make muscle mass. Cortisol depends on your sleep timing, duration, and quality for release. And you need good sleep. It's crucial to your health. Shocking, right? Mm. Nearly every hormone in your body is released in response to your circadian rhythm, the sleep-wake cycle. When you have poor sleep, you could fall down a hormonal flight of stairs. This is what one of the researchers has said. And it doesn't matter your age. Sleep is important for your hormones to function effectively, as some of them are dependent on the sleep-wake cycle. So getting regular sleep can help with your hormonal regulation. Whenever we chronically disrupt sleep, we disturb the balance and leave the door open to all kinds of medical problems. So let's talk about cortisol first. So cortisol, sleep regulates your levels of cortisol, which is a steroid hormone. So what steroid means, it doesn't mean roids, dude, those hormones that you take when you're in the gym. Although roids, dude, are in fact steroids. All that steroid means is there's a particular ring structure in the hormone that is called a steroid ring. That's all it means. So and there are catabolic steroids and there are anabolic steroids. So a catabolic steroid is a steroid that breaks down tissue. So cortisol is a catabolic steroid. And when you take prednisone, when you're given prednisone as a drug or methylprednisolone or any of the steroids that you get, topical steroids or steroids that you snort, that you take as in a nasal spray or you take for asthma. Those are catabolic steroids as well. And catabolic steroids, if you take them in high enough doses, if you take them in very low doses, they stimulate your hormones and they stimulate your immune system. If you take them in high enough doses, they are suppressive to your immune system and they suppress inflammation, which is why they're given to you as nasal sprays if you have allergies, and they're given as inhalers if you have asthma, and you're given topical steroids to put on rashes because it's suppressive to the immune system and it'll suppress the inflammation that's happening, and then whatever condition you have will improve. It doesn't really improve, it's just suppressed. And we believe in natural medicine, you're driving it deeper into the body and it'll come out somewhere else, some other way. So those are catabolic steroids. Anabolic steroids, your reproductive hormones are anabolic steroids. So they, anabolic steroids are simply steroids that cause growth. So the ones that you have in your body, your estrogen, progesterone, testosterone, DHEA, those are anabolic steroids. And the roids dude, the designer steroids that you get, that the people in the gym take, those are anabolic steroids as well. And they, all it means is they have that steroid ring and they enhance growth. So you take them and they're usually analogs of androgens, of testosterone and things like that. So when you relax and sleep well and you wake restored, your cortisol reaches a peak within 30 minutes of waking up, which sets off all your other hormones, including your thyroid and your estrogen. So if you have bad sleep, it has a number of negative effects on cortisol release. It's a good idea to get at least 7 to 9 hours every night to keep your cortisol levels in check. And I need on the higher end of that between 8 and 9 hours or I don't feel good. So estrogen, progesterone, and thyroid. So estrogen, progesterone maintain the health of the reproductive system. If you don't sleep well, cortisol is high when you wake up in the morning, and it's too high. That can disrupt the tango between estrogen and progesterone. It can cause your thyroid to slow down, which can affect your metabolism by slowing it down. So if you have high cortisol, it will slow your thyroid down. Then there are hunger hormones. Sleep regulates your metabolism, the process of chemical reactions in the body that converts your food to energy. If you disrupt your sleep or don't sleep well, it can affect the production of hunger hormones, which can disturb hunger, appetite, and food intake in either direction, leading to weight gain. If you have poor quality sleep, it'll disrupt leptin. So leptin is your satiety hormone. Leptin will make you feel full. And if you don't have enough leptin, you're going to be hungry all the time. Ghrelin, on the other hand, makes you feel hungry. We think of ghrelin because it sounds like growl, right? Because your ghrelin will be high when your stomach is growling. So ghrelin makes you feel hungry. And you might have not enough ghrelin or too much ghrelin. And then insulin. You want to have your insulin be balanced. You want it to get high enough to take sugar out of your blood, but not so high that you become insulin resistant. If you have too much insulin around, you'll be extra hungry. If you eat too much starch and sugar, you wind up having a lot of insulin around because the insulin's going to be released to help to pull the sugar out of your blood, and you get hungry easier, and you wind up getting into the cycle of extreme hunger, extreme eating, extreme hunger, extreme eating, and your insulin will go up and down and pulling too much sugar out of your blood, which will make you extra hungry. So as we said, those leptin, ghrelin, and insulin are responsible for feeling full. The leptin, hunger, insulin, and ghrelin will make you hungry. Blood sugar regulation, obviously the insulin does that. And fat storage, insulin is a big one for fat storage. So these hormones are responsible for how the food you eat gets used for energy and storage in your body. When you have poor sleep, it messes with the interaction and can lead to insulin resistance and weight gain, particularly around your middle. When you're insulin resistant, when your insulin will drive excess starch and sugar that can't be sent into your cells, it'll cause the starch and sugar to be stored as fat, and then the fat's going to be stored generally in your abdomen. Even one night of bad sleep can disrupt your insulin levels. So if you don't sleep well, it's a good idea to watch your sugar intake the next day. On the other hand, the thing is, when you don't sleep well, you tend to be hungrier. Because if your body's like, well, so your lizard brain is like, well, if I'm not sleeping, I should be out looking for food. And if, you know, you're going to make me have energy, I'm going to need something to run that. So you feel more like eating the more you're awake. If you get adequate sleep, that's an amount of time that you don't have to spend eating. And also, your hunger hormones and things are regulated better, so you're not going to have excessive hunger. All right, so melatonin, it's produced by the pineal gland that's associated with your body sleep-wake cycle, helps to regulate your circadian cycle so you can fall and stay asleep. Disrupted or poor sleep can affect your melatonin and helps and its role in promoting your sleep. And it contains it, and melatonin, get this, it controls more than 500 genes in your body, including those in the immune system. So managing your melatonin with good sleep is key. So remember when we were saying during the pandemic, we were saying one of the things you need to do is get your sleep corrected, because sleep will allow you to make melatonin, and the melatonin will help keep your immune system in good shape. And then you can fight COVID better if you were to get COVID. And then people do take melatonin as a supplement, and you should only take melatonin as a supplement if you're pretty clear that you are low in melatonin. If your melatonin is not low enough, if your melatonin is not low enough and you take it as a supplement, you'll have weird dreams. And people like to take melatonin to help them with sleep. But you should only take it if you need it. If you don't need it, it's not helpful to take. And so I have patients who come in, I took some melatonin to help me with my sleep, but I had these really weird, bizarre dreams and I felt really weird when I woke up. Or that you just wake up feeling groggy. So then that means you're melatonin sufficient and you shouldn't take it to help you with sleep. The reason that you're not sleeping is something else. It's usually stress. That's usually what makes it so people can't sleep. You know, there could be lots of other things going on, but it's stress is the overarching thing that happens. Even if you have a condition like you have chronic Lyme disease or you have some kind of immune condition, the reason that you're not sleeping, inflammation leads to increases in cortisol, which will make it hard for you to sleep. So, all right. And then there's growth hormone, human growth hormone, also known as somatotropin or just growth hormone. It helps you with protein production and synthesis, regardless of your age, with muscle development and metabolism and immunity. And sleep impacts the amount and production of your growth hormone. If you cut your sleep, you reduce your levels of growth hormone and may be less able to repair injury. And again, you can accumulate belly fat. According to a study, growth hormones affect the regulation metabolism of glucose, lipids, fats, and proteins in the body. And human growth hormone deficiency has been shown to be associated with alterations in growth, body composition, and metabolism. So if you don't get enough sleep, your hormone levels are going to be messed up. Ideally, you want to be sleeping somewhere between 7 and 9 hours of sleep. And if you're accumulating sleep debt over the week, it's not enough to sleep in during the weekend because you're accumulating sleep debt. If you miss sleep, it can lead to reduced immunity, more infections, more illnesses, a higher appetite, more calories consumed, because again, if you're not sleeping, your body's going to go, all right, you're not asleep. If you're not going to be sleeping, you should be out looking for food. So you're going to want to eat more. And the fact that you're awake, if you're sleeping, you don't need to eat if you're asleep. But if you're awake, you're going to need energy to keep yourself awake. And do you find that sometimes if you're sleepy and you're trying to stay awake, that you'll wind up eating more, that you wind up wanting to have a snack? And then, of course, you can gain weight if you don't sleep enough. If you sleep 4 hours a night for 5 days, you have around a 24-hour sleep debt at the end of the week, and you can't make that up in a weekend. So it's a good idea to get a good night's sleep regularly for optimum hormone regulation. You need to sleep long enough and deeply enough to enter REM, rapid eye movement sleep. Light sleep or sleep that's frequently interrupted won't do it. So if you have sleep apnea, the thing with sleep apnea is people stop breathing. They have a condition where they stop breathing. And they generally stop breathing when they're in stage 1 sleep. So when they stop breathing, they wake up and they wake up in stage one, and then they go back to sleep, and they wake up in stage one, and they wake up feeling exhausted, and they haven't gotten through to stage two, three, and REM. And that is so bad for you. It's bad for your mental health. It's bad for your immunity. It's bad for repair, all the kinds of things that your body needs to do during sleep. You need to get through your one, two, three REM. And so sleep debt is so epidemic that people take it for granted as part of a busy lifestyle. When you sleep, it cleans the toxins in your brain. It's like a power cleanse. When you have poor sleep, it wreaks havoc on your internal biochemistry. When you don't have as good quality of sleep or not enough sleep, it definitely can affect the hormone balance in your body. When you disrupt hormone balance, it will occur if you don't get enough sleep. If your body produces cortisol for longer, which is what you need to do stuff, to do your fight or flight, or just to run your day, you're producing more energy than you need, and it leads to less leptin and more ghrelin. So if you are more active, you're going to have more ghrelin, and more ghrelin is going to make you more hungry, and you're going to have to eat more. You're going to want to eat more. And you may also be skipping the healing and repairing time that comes from growth hormone levels during sleep. Now, if you get too much sleep is not necessarily a good thing. So women tend to do best on cognitive tests with 7 hours of sleep, but increasing beyond 9 hours is associated with lower cognitive source. So sleeping 10 hours is not necessarily good for you. If you do that and you feel fantastic, then that's fine. But between 7 and 9 hours is the sweet spot. And if you sleep too much, it can make you groggy. It can give you daytime fatigue. It can reduce your metabolism and your focus and, of course, disrupt your sleep cycles. Good quality sleep is needed for health and hormone regulation. Both excessive and restricted sleep can have negative effects on your body, including metabolism. So here's some tips to get the sleep you need so you have good hormonal function. The first thing you need to do is drink some water. Pardon me. Okay. So you want to get at least 7 to 9 hours of sleep per night. Try to go to sleep and wake up at regular times to train your body to know when it's time to sleep and when to get up. If you don't sleep well, limit your sugar intake the next day because you're going to have disrupted insulin levels. And when your insulin levels are disrupted, you're going to want to eat more sugar, and that's going to cause weight gain. So eat a higher protein, lower carb diet the next day. You know, just stay away from sweets. Eat more protein. If you want to eat more food, you can. Just make sure it's high in protein and produce. Avoid accumulating sleep debt with missed sleep. That extra Netflix episode isn't worth it. So keep electronics, artificial light, and phones out of the bedroom. We don't tend to do that, but we make it pretty dark. I mean, I have my phone on my nightstand, but it turns completely off. We do have some light sources in the bedroom. We have a clock on the mantle that has a red readout, which isn't too bad. And we have the TV has a little white light at the bottom of it, which I could do without. We don't have shades on our window. So if there's any kind of light source coming in, like nights when the moon is out, like last night. So we could be closed. We have shades. We could close the shades if we wanted to. That doesn't excite me. I kind of like seeing the trees out there, and usually it's pretty much dark enough. You need to keep your sleep space cool enough and well ventilated. Most people need it cooler, and if your body cools down, it's easier to fall asleep. When your body is hot, it's harder to fall asleep. We've got that situation where I tend to be a hot sleeper and he tends to be a cool sleeper. So, you know, since it's easier for him to get warm, you know, he can wear clothes and he can put blankets on, but I can only take so much off. So the last thing we did was we got a new mattress pad. We hadn't gotten a mattress pad. I don't even know how old that old mattress pad is. It's probably scary old.
I think it came with the mattress.
Oh, are you sure?
Yeah.
Does that mean sure. So then it's like 12, 14 years old?
Maybe.
Yeah. We got a brand new mattress pad, and it's supposed to be cooling, and it's very thick. It's really a nice mattress pad.
It's okay.
Very comfortable. Yeah. So we got that, and we have a bamboo. We have bamboo sheets or viscose sheets, and we have a cooling blanket on top. And then for Ron to be warmer, he wears more clothes and he puts on extra blankets. And I have to sleep, I can't wear hot pajamas anymore. I can't wear like fuzzy pajamas anymore. So even in the winter, I have to wear at least short sleeves. And this time of year, I'm wearing sleeveless. So make sure that you're cool enough. By the way, the supplement glycine can help you to sleep. And glycine is a really nice supplement. It helps with a lot of things. Glycine is one of the components of collagen. So if you take it, it'll help you to build muscle mass. But glycine also is calming. It helps with anxiety, and it helps you to sleep. And one of the ways that it helps with sleep is it helps to lower your body temperature at night. I was taking glycine, and then I would just conk out really, really fast. So the things that make you conk out, like glycine and taurine and theanine, I can take theanine if I've hyped up during the day, but if I take it at night, I get like drugged out, fall asleep too fast. So I stopped taking because I can fall asleep on my own okay. So, and I definitely sleep better when I'm getting regular cardio exercise. So make sure you have a good mattress so your body can rest comfortably and deeply. And it's a good idea to look for mattresses that are green. I mean, they don't have to be the color green, but they don't have chemicals in them. And so find a mattress that works for you. And you need to find a mattress that you lie on it. You have to be able to go to the mattress store and lie down in it and see if you're going to feel good when you're on that mattress. And there's that store that you can go to that they have that contraption that you can lie down on, and they'll give you ideas about what mattress you want. So then you should also create a wind down routine to prepare your body for rest. So, you know, that's turn off your devices, maybe read a little bit, maybe meditate, maybe do a little bit of relaxing yoga, listen to music that calms you down. And there's all kinds of things you can do. You can listen to calming music on your smart TV. You can listen to it on your app. You can choose, calming sleep routines or sleep playlists from some of your apps, from your Apple Music, your Spotify, your YouTube Music, whatever app that you have. You can find videos online that you can listen to. And anything that works for you that way, just so that you're not rushing around and then trying to get into bed and rest, because that's not going to work. I personally, and everybody's different about what works for them, but my thing is I like to do yin or restorative yoga at night. And once I do the yin and restorative yoga, then I'm not going to be doing anything else productive in the day. Once I do that, I'm done for the day. I'm going to maybe watch a little relaxing TV. I'm going to read a book. I'm going to go to sleep. So that's my signal. That is my transition from the activity of the day into the evening. And you can have anything like that you're, it's like, you know, body's happy hour. So it's your transition from the day into the restful time of the night. And you know, when I engage in the stretches and the deep breathing of yin and restorative yoga, it really reminds my body, okay, now it's time for you to wind down and you don't have to do anything else. You can set everything else that you were planning to do for the day aside. If you want to use a wearable device, you can learn about your sleep patterns. And so that can be an app on a watch. And then there are those rings that you can get that are attached to an app, and they track your sleep and your sleep patterns. So some people who are really so the thing is, I'm trying to avoid getting the watch. Do you have a sleep tracker on your watch, on your Apple Watch?
I do.
Yeah, do you use it?
No.
Oh, okay. And you don't want to?
I haven't thought to use it.
Yeah.
Should I?
You don't have to. You really don't. If you don't care about it, you're happy with your sleep.
I don't care.
So the thing is, some people like to track everything. I have patients who come in and they want numbers, numbers, numbers.
Oh,
so
boy.
They have the Oura ring, or they have an Apple Watch, or they have a Fitbit, or I am afraid to get a watch because it's going to be one more thing that I'm going to be looking at numbers for. And on the other hand, it would be interesting to try because then I could discuss it with my patients because I have patients who are definitely into it. And you definitely get good information when you use things like that. So you can do that if you want to. Now, sleep masks. I tried to use the sleep mask, but I'm a person that doesn't like stuff on my head. You know, I don't like to wear hats. I don't even like to wear headbands. I have to wear a headband when I'm on the bike because I sweat and I'm a head sweater. My head sweats and my forehead sweats. And if I don't wear some kind of a band, so did you know this about me that I have to wear a band around my forehead because if I don't, the sweat gets in my eyes.
Yeah, when you ride your bike.
When I ride my bike, yeah. Right. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, so I always have to wear one, and not everybody does, but I definitely do. So the sleep mask thing, I didn't own any sleep masks. And I went to a conference. When I went to the CNPA conference, one of the vendors was giving them out as a premium, just a gift. Mm. And so I have a couple of sleep masks, and they're really cute. They're pink and blue. You can borrow one if you want. But they're frilly. So anyway, I tried to wear one and I don't like having stuff on my head and my face. If I had to sleep during the day, if I was in a situation where I had to sleep during the day, I might wear, and you know where a good place to have a sleep mask is on an airplane. If you want to get yourself to rest on an airplane, that's a good place to have it if you're flying during the day. And that's a good idea. I should really put that in my pocketbook. When I go on the plane, and I'll try it. I'll see if it works. And because I have the extra one, I should bring one to mom. So sleep masks can be really helpful if you live in a place where it's very hard to get rid of all the light. I find when I turn the lights off at night, it's very soothing and it signals to my body, okay, now you can relax. And I just getting rid of all that input into my eyes is very relaxing. It's very soothing. I look forward to that time because then I can, I can rest and my body's just like, all right, it's time to rest now. You can do a white noise machine. I don't like white noise, but some people do. Some people really do like white noise. No,
Amy likes it at the store, at your office.
I don't know that she likes it. They find it's necessary because we don't have good insulation in the walls. That's why we have it.
Oh, okay.
It's not because we like it. I mean, some of them remark that they like listening to it. I don't like it. I find it because extra noise distracts me. I'm one of those people that I'm so sensitive to sound and to music. I can't have music going when I'm working because it distracts me. Because I'm very sensitive to music. I'll pay attention to the music instead. And I love music, but I have to be paying attention to the music or the computer. I can't have both. So I find the white noise machine annoying. And when I go to acupuncture, Nicole offers me white noise and I say, no, I don't want white. I would rather hear Nicole in the waiting room, and she's far enough away that it's not loud. I'd rather occasionally hear Nicole talking or walking around checking on the patients than hear white noise. Like natural sounds around me are fine, but having the white noise bothers. But we have it at the office so it's harder to hear what's going on in the rooms. But if you like white noise, you can get machines. You can get apps on your phone. You can also get white noise machines, and white noise machines will have different settings. So they'll have the one they like to put on is the thunderstorm setting. That's the one they always put on. Hmm. And it doesn't sound like a thunderstorm to me. It just sounds like constant roaring, which is anyway, but they like it. So I let them play that. And we have strategically placed machines. There's one in the back office and so that, they can't hear what I'm saying. It only works so well. And there's one next to the front door of my office. And then there's one next to the office that the counselors use. So they're all welcome to use that. Really, you should only be using your bedroom for sleep and sex, but I don't do that. I'm a person who likes to lay around in bed. I'm one of those. So I spend time in my bed relaxing. I like to read in bed. I look at my phone in bed, and we watch TV in bed, which you're really not supposed to do. But and I exercise in my bedroom too, but I don't exercise while I'm trying to sleep. But I find my bedroom very soothing and relaxing. That's why I spend a lot of time in it. So I don't find it relaxing to try to relax in a different room in the house. Ron does. He used to relax in the living room next to the kitchen. Now he relaxes in the downstairs room because we made it into a nice little den. So if you're going to talk to a professional about your sleep, if your sleep isn't great, if you wake up groggy every day, if you're feeling fatigued throughout the day, you can talk to a sleep expert, and they might want to do a sleep study and find out whether you have a sleep disorder. And you should also just see your primary care physician, because there can be other reasons why you're not sleeping. I mean, if somebody comes in and says, I'm not sleeping well, I'm tired, there's things that... So sleep, going to a sleep specialist is only one of the things that I might recommend. Find out if they know if they're anemic, if they're hypothyroid. If they don't know, then I'm going to do blood work or get records of their blood work to find out if they're anemic, if they're iron deficient, if they're B12 deficient, if they are hypothyroid, if there's anything going on in their metabolic panel that could be off. Could they have elevated liver enzymes? Do they have something going on in their physical body that's preventing sleep? I look at the medications that they're taking. Could the medications be disrupting their sleep or making them extra tired? So there's a lot of things that I look at to assess whether why somebody's not sleeping well. Are they getting too much exercise? Are they getting not enough exercise? Are they very stressed? So they might not have a sleep disorder, where, you know, a sleep disorder is often a breathing disorder. And so usually when you get into a sleep disorder, if you're having sleep apnea, they're going to give you a CPAP or some kind of a CPAP, something that is going to help you to breathe at night. So there may be other reasons why you're not sleeping well. So you look at those things first, and if the person's ready to go, I really want to go to a pulmonologist and do a sleep study. Usually it's a pulmonologist or your local health company, you know, your local hospital or the health company it's under, because all these places are under companies now. There'll be, at, for example, a Hartford Healthcare Sleep Disorders Clinic. Okay. And so, you know, Hartford Healthcare or Yale New Haven or ECHN is going to have a sleep disorders center that you can go to if you want to. And sleep disorder is generally under the purview of a pulmonologist. A pulmonologist is a doctor that takes care of your breathing and your lungs. So you need a good night's sleep. Did you know that? Mm. Ron just yawned.
I'm yawning.
I know. A good night's sleep is necessary for hormone balance in your body. And hormone balance is important for bodily functions and processes. If you don't get enough sleep, if you get poor sleep, that can lead to hormone imbalance, which can have negative effects. Stick to a good sleep routine. Get about 7 to 9 hours of sleep at night. Limit sugar intake the day after your sleep is disrupted, which can help you regulate your hormones and reap the health benefits that go with it. I also want to say that one of the things that this article didn't mention is that if you don't get regular exercise, it's going to be harder for you to sleep. I know that I sleep mm-hmm. better when I get regular cardio. If I just get resistance training and yoga, I sleep pretty good. But if I get cardio, I really sleep. Like, I've been sleeping really great the last couple of nights because I got back on the bike. So when I get back on the bike, when I'm riding my bike, I sleep good because my body really needs the rest and it needs to do a lot of repair. I wind up sleeping more deeply. I wake up less times during the night, which is really nice. So make sure you're getting regular exercise. And what's the best exercise for you?
The one you'll do.
You got it. Yes. So it's whatever you'll do. Going for a walk is fantastic. Going for a walk that's not very fast is fantastic. Going for a walk just in your yard is fantastic. Anything that you'll do, do something in your house, do something outside your house, do something that you enjoy, do something that you don't particularly care about but is easy for you to do. The exercise that you need to do doesn't need to be difficult. It just needs to be. Your body was meant to move. It wasn't meant to just sit still. So make sure to do that. Okay, so so that's all about sleep and hormones. So so in terms of sleep, the things that we tend to look at, you know, people are like, what can I take to help me sleep? Well, one of the things, as I said, I do is I look at people's thyroid hormones and get their thyroid corrected. I might do things. GABA, gamma-aminobutyric acid, is an inhibitory hormone. And most of the nervines that you take, the herbs that control your nerves, raise your GABA function. They either attach to receptors or they simulate GABA. So your not Chinese skullcap, but American skullcap, Scutellaria lativiflora, chamomile, oat straw, hops, lavender, tulsi, they all enhance GABA function. And these are things you could be, like I drink tulsi tea at night. I'd have an 8-ounce glass of tulsi tea in the evening. That may be one of the things that helps me to sleep at night. If I'm hyped up during the day, I tend to take L-theanine. I tend not to take it at night because I don't need that extra GABA function at night. So anyway, so there are definitely some supplements that you can take that can help you with sleep. Valerian is a big one, although valerian you have to be careful because it really can make you groggy. I also really like California poppy to help with sleep. So, and that's what we talked about, sleep and hormones today. That was our exciting thing. And so we'll talk next week about weight loss and those popular drugs. And I hope you have a great week. You have been listening to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host, Ron Meniza. You can email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, and Spotify. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live and Instagram Live episode at Fran Storch, ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of the station. The information presented on this show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM, WHUS Doors, and WHUS.org.